We're delighted that this episode is sponsored by our good friends at DGR Slatter Decorators in Jersey.
Like us, they're a family that cares, and family is the cornerstone of everything that they do.
With 47 years of experience spanning three generations, they've built a legacy of excellence and expertise.
So whether you're looking to add a splash of colour to your living room, revamp your bedroom with some intricate wallpaper, or maybe you want a complete home makeover, DGRSlatter.com are there to make your vision a reality.
Pressure to be thin, to be pretty, to always look perfect, to have a good career, to be successful at school, in university, to have children by a certain age, to get married, to have the perfect family. It's exhausting. I felt all those things. Like, these are all pressures that just I felt. And I know that there's pressures that, you know, people feel all the time from all different areas of society, life, friends, people around them. I mean, even, you know, as I said about having the perfect family, to have the perfect family dynamic. Mm. There's so many pressures that we feel all the time to be a certain way.
Yeah, I think that's just life, isn't it? I think we all feel pressure from somewhere at some point, and you know, that can be huge things, or it can be the smallest of things, like, you know, the pressure to, you know, have a clean house, pressure to, you know, when you cook a meal that it's got to be perfect, pressure that, you know, when you go out in the world that you should always have a smile on your face. And the truth is that, you know, this is predominantly self-imposed pressure, of course, but ultimately, you know, who's actually putting this pressure on?
Well, we're actually creating the pressure ourselves, aren't we? Let's be honest, because I know there's certain expectations in society, but we take those expectations and we internalise them and create pressure, don't we? That's what's going on, because whilst we all feel pressure to some degree, we don't all feel exactly the same pressures, do we?
No, but I mean, I think that, like Liv said, I think that when we carry all these pressures, it means we just can't switch off. You know, we're always sort of seeking this perfection, or certainly a perception of perfection.
Absolutely, I guess. I think it's a perception of what everyone else is doing, isn't it? So, you know, if we're talking about pressure to look a certain way, it's because that's what we're seeing everybody else looks like on social media or with filters, or, you know, there's a pressure to be the right dress size, right? Which is just ridiculous. Yeah. But that's the way we're made to feel, because that's what we feel that everyone else is doing. So it is this pressure of, you know, what we think others are doing. In the same way, I mentioned about, you know, pressure to kind of reach certain milestones, which is something I think a lot of people feel. Mm-hmm. And again, that's that perception of what we should be doing, because what everyone else is doing, everyone else is getting married and having kids, or everybody else has got a really successful career, or they're doing really well for themselves. And it is that pressure to be so perfect. And the irony is, you know, no, everyone's feeling that pressure, like you say, in different places, and nobody is perfect.
So what you, basically, this pressure is derived from comparison and how we look at, I mean, ultimately, if we didn't have anyone else to compare to, would we feel that pressure?
So true.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
I don't think we would.
I don't think we do. And I think that the thing that we all should really embrace here, and this is going in my...
In my
metaphorical handbook to happiness. I think the thing that we should all embrace is the fact that our personal life story is just that. It's ours. Mm. It's nobody else's. And I suppose, I mean, a question for you, Hunter, actually, about pressure... Which, just as Liv was talking, made me think that obviously there's an 8-year age gap between you, Liv, and Hunter. And we've made it very apparent, you know, that you...
You made that sound like we had three
people.
Kids
there.
You, Liv, and Hunter. Where's this third child come from?
I was like, who's she referring to?
Apologies. I've only got two of you.
Yeah.
However, my question to you, Hunter, is that, you know, Liv is always incredibly academic. And did you feel pressured to be as academic because of Liv?
And live up to her expectations, I suppose.
I don't know, really. I think inevitably, yes. But because there's such a big age gap, I've kind of grown up. I've seen her achieve so much from such a young age that I think it just kind of became naturally ingrained in my beliefs, I guess, like my approaches. So it didn't really feel like it, but I can't see how it wouldn't have made an impact.
Can I? I don't know if you remember this, Hunter. I'm sure.
No, I do.
You know where I'm going, don't you? I bet.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you know? Okay, so it's GCSE result day. Olivia's school. We're going to Liv's school. Hunter, at that point, so you're 15, 16. So Hunter's like 7 or 8, isn't he, at this point?
Yeah.
And we go into school to collect Liv's exam results. She gets her letter, and you opened it in such a way that you scrolled down so you were getting one result at a time.
Yeah.
And smart cookie, you got 10 A stars. And we were all rejoicing. We're jumping around. And Hunter is looking like, I am so unimpressed. And we turn around to him, and this is a little 7 or 8 year old boy. And I said, Hunter, your sister's got 10 A stars. Are you not happy? And he said, what was it? Charming. That's great. Now I'm going to have to get 11. Do you remember that?
I don't think it was quite that like that. From my memory, I think I was a little bit nicer, and I was happy, and I wasn't quite as annoyed by it. It was more, I said it more as a joke rather than being a little nuisance.
Well, don't worry about it, Hunter, because the thing is, I was so elate in that moment. Elate, is that my word?
Elated.
I was thinking the word irate came into my head, which is a totally different thing. I was so elated in that moment. I think that I don't even remember it. So I was in a bit of a daze.
I found it really funny.
Do you know, I thought it was incredibly witty.
I just thought...
That boy there is going to be a joker like his dad.
Yeah.
Right? And he's going to tell jokes and just come out with witty comments, which he does. And he all does. The time. His one liners are amazing.
And unfortunately, he actually is very funny.
Yeah. And he did get 11. Let's just point that out as well. Oh, yes. He did
what he said he was going to do.
He absolutely did what he said he was going to do.
But it's nice to know that you didn't feel pressured, Hunter, I guess. Because, I mean, like you said, I think there's an element of wanting to do well because your sibling has done well. But you know, I think, from a parental point of view, I wouldn't have been bothered.
No, not at all, because all we wanted was for you to be happy, and that's, you know, that's it. However, when it came to you looking at universities in America, you got pressured against that as well, didn't you?
Yeah, and this is what I was going to say. So I think that the pressure really just comes from how far you deviate from what's like the average. So when I was... Because academically, I was always kind of around people like yourselves and Liv that always kind of were in the same, like, push academic, and that was kind of the norm, so it didn't really feel any different. But when it came to applying to universities, everyone at my school was going to the UK. I was the only one that suggested the idea, really, of applying in the US. And that made it really difficult because a lot of the teachers didn't know how to do it. A lot of the teachers didn't know about the system, so kind of shot it down. A couple that did, I mean, it's like it was really difficult. I mean, it was a difficult process, but a lot more than it really was, and made it sound very unachievable. And I think that, as I was saying, like, the more that you deviate from the average, the more pressure there is, but equally that kind of means you're more unique as well in that stance.
Such a good point.
And
you see,
that being
that is
unique,
such a smart comment, Hunter.
Though, it's so true, because even when people feel pressured to reach milestones, like I said before, that's because they feel they're not doing what everyone else is doing. Because other people are doing, you know, other people have got children, other people have got married, other people, and Hunter's right.
He's absolutely spot on, because saying if you deviate from the norm as such, then all people can do is look at how they would deal with that. And because a lot of people strive for the norm, it's like, well, why do you want to do that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand why you want to do that. You're just making it more difficult for yourself. Surely it's easy just to do this.
Do you not think then that...
If you look how...
Go on, Hunter, what are you going to say?
Sorry, Lou. I was saying, if you look how far... Like, people that have really advanced society have deviated. A lot of people had these ideas and were shot down for them and told that they weren't, the idea wasn't good enough. Or, like, Thomas Edison with the light bulb and how many times he failed. People going, oh, it's never going to work and all of that. And yet, because he kept trying and was so far from the average, he made something magical.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's just really a nice thing.
I was just going to ask before what Hunter was saying there, I was just going to say that do you not think then that the key here is to question Are we doing something just because we feel we should do it, or are we doing something because we actually want to do it? Because why should we have to do what is a norm? And even, is the norm the right thing? Because do you not think as well that norms change throughout society? So, sure. You know, if we always have a joke about the fact that, you know, you always, in your sort of day and age, shall we say.
In our era, it was always, Nick, does my bum look big in this? The answer, whatever I thought, yes. was always no, yeah, not now. At all. But now, Dad. You ask me, Dad, does my bum look big in this? Yes, it does.
But do you understand what I'm saying? That these things change. And then again, a stupid thing that the women listening will, you know, totally relate to, I'm sure, that we've spoke about recently, Mum, is eyebrows. That it was so fashionable to have really thin
please.
Eyebrows.
Let's talk eyebrows. You know, in my day and age, I had to overpluck my eyebrows so it looked like I had a matchstick over my eye, like the thinnest thing. Overplucked. Now I'm having to draw them in because of the bigger eyebrows.
Laminating. That's the thing now, isn't it? Laminating eyebrows. So this is the thing, like, things change. So we could feel, I know it's a silly example, but you could feel pressure that your eyebrows don't look like everyone else's, or you've not got a small bum like everyone else. And then the next thing you know, it's like, well, that's great. That's the opposite. So
also,
you know, we feel, sorry, go on, what are you going to say?
So I was going to say, like, I mean, I totally agree with that. I think sometimes it's important to try and be different and change the norm, because although sometimes the norm just changes by itself, sometimes the norm isn't right. And if you look at the minute now, social beliefs in the UK have come so far from where they were even a decade ago. I mean, gay marriage was only legalized in 2014, 2015. And look how attitudes have come since then. Like, it's really important to push for certain things and be different and not care about that. And then other people will follow. And for societal advancement, I would say. Awesome.
I totally agree. And, you know, we feel these pressures to fit that norm, and Hunter's, you know, absolutely spot on with that. And questioning, like, do we actually believe it? Do we want to be that way? Do we, you know, do you actually want to, you know, have that career? Or, I mean, I think a great example is, you know, Gerard Butler. So Gerard Butler was studying to be a lawyer, was so successful at it. He'd spent years studying to be a lawyer, and he was doing incredibly, got one of the best jobs.
Yeah, he became president of the Law Society
at
a young age.
Yeah, he got given the most amazing job. I think he said, I remember reading that, you know, hundreds of people went for this interview and there was only two spots and he got one of them. And he was doing it and he was so successful that everyone would go, yeah, on paper, he ticks that box. He's doing a great job. You know, no pressure there, as in, you know, just to carry on doing what he's doing because it's all great. But it wasn't what made him happy. So he was probably, I suppose, in another way, he was feeling pressure to carry on doing what he was doing, but he wasn't enjoying it and he wasn't happy. And what he decided to do was basically quit and go and try acting. And I'm sure the pressure he must have felt in that moment to carry on what he was doing, you know, why would you leave that when it's so good? But that's because the norm is, if you've got a good job, you should want to stay in it and you should continue. Mm. And, you know, the amount of people that we see in clinic that will say, you know, oh, I do this job, I don't really enjoy it, but I'm so far down the road now that they feel that pressure to stay. Yeah. And it's like, well, if you're only here once, if you're not happy, make a change. Who can tell you that you have to have that pressure to stay in doing something that you don't want to do? And he left and he went and did acting, and thank God he did, because he's bloody amazing,
think,
isn't he?
Going back to pressure and generation, like, we're talking about changes, but talking about a generational pressure, you know, in when we were younger, and obviously you're a lot older than me, Nick, so for you more so than me, of course.
Is that your attempt to crack in a joke?
I thought it was really funny. But, you know, literally our parents, our dads were taught that, you know, they had the pressure of, you know, you've got to be the breadwinner, you've got to sort of go out, work, hold this family together, you've got the pressure of, you've got to be sort of look really strong, not show any emotion. And I think, and that generational pressure in our age group and above more so, that still exists, because although some people do adapt, you know, we've adapted with, and I think that having kids helps you adapt, because, you know, I know that Liv and Hunter have taught us so much in the changes that have happened in the world. But there are still a lot of people that aren't changing and they are still holding that pressure.
You're absolutely right. And I've got to tell you, I still feel that. And it's really, we think about it, we work together. So why should I have all the pressure, any financial pressures, when we're doing things together? It's how we're conditioned. And I think it's a big failing for a lot of men now, not looking at situations and going, actually, does that still apply? Because you know, thankfully, a lot of women now don't have to fit in that box. Well, you stay at home and have kids and so on. A lot of women, there's more opportunities for them. And, you know, a lot of women are very career-driven, you know, which is great. So therefore, then shouldn't that be, you know, if it is a burden, a shared burden between partners, you know, obviously not necessarily a man and a woman, but just sharing those burdens so we don't all feel that absolute pressure. So I'm just wondering here whether, so we're talking about pressure, so is this pressure just because we're trying to adhere to social norms? Is that and that's how it's creating? Because you know, one thing that I don't think we mentioned is fashion and how clothes go in and out of fashion. And one thing, I'm going to say something profound here, it's facts, isn't it? Because you try and you want to wear fashionable clothes, but the clothes that you like, you know, and some people might not like them, but the clothes that you like and you've had in your wardrobe a long time, they are always in fashion for you.
Yes. Yeah. No, that is, that's true.
And isn't that good enough?
And it should be. And I think this is where a lot of young people and children really struggle, particularly at school, and where, you know, you have the pressure of wearing all the latest clothes like everybody else, you know, having sort of being beautiful 24/7, having sort of being really sociable, being really fun. There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, massive pressure at that age.
Yeah, particularly, I think so. And then you've got also kind of social pressures, as in I'm talking like socializing pressure here.
Yeah.
You know,
again, especially at school and university. Like, I remember probably one of the hardest times for me, I think, in my life, because, and I think for probably a lot of people listening, you know, that school and university, that time in your life, is one of the hardest times. Just because you seem to go from childhood, where really there's not a massive amount of pressure on the whole, because you're kind of looked after by your parents, to suddenly you get to teenage years and the pressure's like tenfold. It's like all of a sudden you've got pressure to do well at school and university, you know, to get ready to go to university. And then when you get to university, and then pressures to find your friendship groups, and pressures to have fashion trends, and pressures to, you know, obviously peer pressures of like drinking, smoking, like vaping, all these things that are coming about, social media, because now suddenly we're exposed to social media. There's so many pressures that all hit in that time of life.
Can we ask Hunter then? Hunter, are you feeling that pressure right now?
Massively. I mean, in every aspect. I mean, especially at the beginning, like we've said, about finding friends. 100%. At the beginning, it forced me to find people and to hang around with people that, if anything, kind of distracts me from the people I would have really been friends with and that I got along with really well. But because I felt the pressure to do that and to rush that process, that it didn't really have great results, I guess. I think that's also important. It's just figuring out what is actually important to you. And I think sometimes those societal pressures can be important, or not necessarily important, but they're around because a lot of people believe them sometimes. So, for example, obviously it's important to find friends, but questioning how important that is to you on and where the time scale it is. And so here, there is a lot of pressure, both to care for myself, to do well, and also I want to do well, but it is a lot, and it's overwhelming already having come to a different country and trying to figure all that out, to have all this on top as well.
Yeah, that's massive pressure. And I think that, you know, social pressures, like, and socializing and trying to be sociable when you've got all the other stuff going on is a lot.
Yeah, and trying to find commonalities to start off a conversation. And funnily enough, we actually have a question that has been sent in from Craig and Nat. And let's hear what they've got to say.
As you know, you've been on Hunted, you know that sometimes it's difficult to go up to people and ask them for help. So we want to know, what's your best advice on meeting new people, asking them questions and making friendships cost? We hate it, don't we?
Yeah.
Absolutely hate it. Fills us with dread.
That's a really great question, actually. When we were on Celebrity Hunted, which was like so challenging, probably one of the most difficult things we've ever done, we literally had nothing, and we would have to go up to strangers and ask if we could use their telephone. I was knocking on people's doors as well, and I can't deny that it wasn't comfortable. But when you're on a mission and something's very important to you, then it does make things easier to, definitely makes it easier.
Putting
to
that
do.
Into perspective, I'm obviously, it was a very difficult situation, but we were desperate because we didn't want to get caught by the hunters. And actually, our opening gambit was, we're fugitives on the run. could you help us, please? Yes. All right. So, I mean, not the best of opening gambits yeah. with anyone. However, in you know, when you're not unhunted in normal life, one of the best ways to go and talk to a stranger is actually to give them a compliment. And, you know, we walk down the street and we see people and we see them wearing, you know, they might have a nice jacket, the hair might be nice, you know, they might have beautiful eyes or nails, you know, whatever it is. And we have these thoughts on a regular basis and we then walk past them and we never share those things. And we should do. And it's a great way of talking to someone that you've never met, just to say to them, excuse me, can I just tell you something? Your eyes are incredible.
So, yeah, 100%. Compliments is definitely one, as is being aware of something that might be a commonality. Like, so let's say, for example, they're wearing a Manchester United Football Club scarf.
Oof, or, is that the one you're bringing out? Yeah. All right, yeah. Manchester United. Oh, I love Manchester United. Yes. Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah.
Please do slot in your favourite football club.
You see that match on Saturday
club.
When they lost. Yeah. Well,
but if you can see something about them that you can create a commonality with, and that might not be what they're wearing, that might be even the location you're in. So if you're at a wedding, for example, you know, you can start a conversation with, you know, oh, are you a friend of the bride? Or the groom, or, you know, and it's look at commonality is the way, the best way. So compliments first, second way to start conversation, definitely commonality. And third.
Oh, can I just say, ton of commonalities. If you're outdoors, the classic British, oh, look at the weather. Oh. Have you seen the weather today?
Isn't it a lovely day? Oh, but, oh that it's one, chucking yeah. it
but
down.
But we're starting a conversation sun. There, moaning. Not a good way. It's we don't
it's
want
a classic
that.
British no, weather,
well,
isn't it?
Well, it might
it
be, is, but we don't want to do that, right? But that's... we want to be keep it upbeat. So we've got compliments.
What was your third one? Compliments, yeah. commonalities. Tell me it starts with a C because it just
Please,
the three C's.
Oh,
compliments,
C's.
Commonalities. What's your third one?
And I don't know. It wasn't going to be that, but curiosity is the only word I can think of.
What were you going to say?
No, what I was going to say is just remember your end goal. You're not, you know, you're not doing anything wrong.
Consequence.
Yeah. No.
Is that the right thing?
That'd work.
Compliments, commonalities, and consequence.
But your consequence is a positive thing.
Ness.
Oh, come on. We're not.
Yeah. I think we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Yeah. I'm going to add my own fourth one, I think, potentially as well. And I think that actually speaking to people is a bit of societal pressure. Like coming to the US, everyone here is so nice and just so willing to speak to each other. And it's a very normal thing here that strangers will interact. Whereas in the UK, I never really experienced that. And I think a big part of it is just that societally, culturally, we don't really speak to people that much. I think that like, just put yourself in their shoes and imagine that someone's coming up to you and talking to you. I think most times, like, at least for me, I would be, like, it'd be nice to speak to someone here. It's nice to meet someone. I think we all kind of feel the same, but having human connection is nice and just speaking to new people is really interesting.
Yeah.
So just come put yourself in their shoes. And if someone came up and spoke to you, you'd be fine with it and appreciate that a lot of that, like, hesitation and trepidation is really the pressures rather than anything else. Because even here, I still feel that. And I'm like, well, no, actually, people here find that really normal. Like, it's a completely fine thing to do.
Yeah, I totally echo what Hunter said there, because I think that is it. It depends on your culture, doesn't it? So in the UK, we don't tend to really talk to each other. I mean, I think Northerners maybe a bit more, but we don't tend to just start conversations.
I think definitely. I think Hunter's absolutely spot on there. And I remember going back to when I was little, that my dad, when he would take me up to Rorton Town Centre, which, I mean, literally, from our house, it was a 10-minute walk. It would take an hour because he literally stopped and spoke to everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's not a cultural thing. I think it's sort of been lost with the fact that, I mean, let's see, we've gone from talking to people like that to actually you go in a restaurant, you can have four people sat at a table, right? And they're all on the phones, right? So they're not even talking to each other when they actually maybe live together and they've gone out together, right? So it's just changed just the way I think social media's been a big change in that. Mm. But actually, we all have an inherent need for connection and to be able to talk
We're
to people.
We're a social species. And I think as well that, you know, like Hunter said, and I was going to say the same thing and he said it perfectly, but there's never a time, well, unless you're in a rush or you're stressed out or whatever, but 9 times out of 10, if someone says something to you and has a nice chat with you, it always kind of, you know, makes you feel a bit lifted.
Of course it does.
So knowing how we feel in that situation when we have a nice conversation with someone, I suppose considering that, consider Considering how we feel, yeah. If we were in that situation, how would we feel? Courteously consider,
because the truth is that, you know, what we're actually saying is, I don't think that you're going to be interested in what I've got to say. I don't think you're going to be interested in speaking to me. But the truth is that this person probably would really enjoy that. I know that when we, you know, we said about up north, you tend to find that people speak, you know, to strangers much more readily. And then when we go to London, sometimes it's not quite, there's not that quite that dynamic. However, we continue to practice our northernness in the south. And what I can absolutely 100% say is that everybody we chat to is absolutely gorgeous and lovely and chat back. Craig and Nat.
Another question.
They did send a very lovely message, actually, to say they were really enjoying the podcast. So thank you very
much. Thanks, guys. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so they did have a fun question, they said, for us. So, yeah, let's see what it is.
For all of you, what's your favourite ice lolly?
I was not expecting that question.
Hunter, go on, yes. Tell us. You go first. What's your favourite ice lolly?
I can't say I'm well versed enough in the world of ice lollies. I've never really been someone to partake in one, so I honestly don't really know, unfortunately.
I've never seen you eat an ice lolly, Hunter. I'll put it out there.
I feel like I've deprived you somehow, Hunter, that I didn't introduce you to the world of ice lollies.
We've not really eaten them ourselves.
That's true.
So, Hunter, you've not got one?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'd say, is it a Calypso? You know those, like, standard orange? That's what I used to get from school at the ice cream van in the summer.
And you push them up.
Yeah, those ones.
And then
they'd melt a bit, and then you get like a bit of juice at the end. Yes. A bit of orange juice in the bottom. Yeah, used to love them.
See, mine when I was a kid, one of two things, ice cream van at school, and it would either be an apple cider lolly or a fab.
Is that a bit wrong?
Is that an actual cider in it?
No, they were just called apple cider lollies, right, but okay, no, there was no alcohol.
Right, okay.
Fab's an interesting choice. I've got to be honest, I've never really been a fan of a fab.
Oh, I loved
them. We used to get given them out at sports day at school, and they were a bit, I don't know. I just wasn't a fan of the variation. Right, there was too much variety for me within the
I'm just having another memory coming in.
Oh, go on, what forgot?
A rocket. Do you remember those rocket lollies?
No, I don't remember that.
This has now started me off going down memory lane. Anyway, Nick, what's yours?
Never really been a fan, I've got to be honest. So the only thing that I can come up with when I was little, a jubbly.
What the hell is that?
Which was like, it was like a pyramid, like a triangle type thing.
Oh, they were quite big.
And why did you eat it then?
You'd cut one of the edges off,
and then you squeeze it out.
It was like a caveman version of your Calypso. Like it was whereas yours was nice and slick, your dad's was like a big rock.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about.
Also, and that's why I gave up on them early in life.
Also, just throw it out there, fruit pastel ice lollies, also used to love those. Yeah. See, I did like the variety in them. The fab, it was just like the different textures, as in like the ice creamy bit, the ice lolly bit. It was just too much.
Oh no, I love that.
They couldn't decide what it wanted
question,
to be.
So for anybody listening out in America, do they call them ice lollies or ice pops, Hunter?
Ice pops.
No.
See? Ice pops.
Yeah. I did not know that.
Learned
something new.
See, so the
there's
a whole host of stuff.
So we've moved.
Sorry, Hunter was going to say something then.
I was just thinking that there's some other ice lolly adjacent thing that I've talked about with people here. I'm kind of trying to remember what it was, but I can't. It's not coming to me.
Oh, okay, we'll come back to you then.
No, I'm going to have to go now anyway because I do have a lecture to get to.
Oh, okay. Well, we completely understand. We're grateful for your company on today's Pressure podcast. And you now have pressure to go to your lecture.
I was going to say, I'm glad that he didn't feel the pressure to have to stay.
Yes.
That's it. He didn't. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well done, Hunter.
Yes, well done. We'll see you later, Hunter. Well, we'll carry on chatting.
Thank you.
We love you.
Spot without me, and hopefully I gave you some good ideas to throw
you
into
did
the
indeed.
As always.
Nuggets of wisdom were heard. Thanks, Hunter. See you later. Bye. Yeah, so where were we? Pressure of choosing our favourite lolly.
Yeah, that put pressure on me.
Yeah, it did. Quite nice sometimes having a little trip down memory lane, isn't it?
Talking about pressure, and particularly peer pressure, I was going to give a joke on that. A joke just about peer pressure, but my friends talked me out of it.
That's actually semi-funny. I'll give you that. That's funnier than, that gave me like a light chuckle. Which is more than usual.
Can you not give us a better one than that?
I've been saving that up.
You can tell he's been working on that.
That was good though. I've been thinking about that all the time we're doing that. I thought, what can I come up with?
You're a bit quiet. Yeah. I think you need to make a bit more effort. Anyway, going back to what we were talking about, pressures. Yeah. So I know that we put this out on our social media, and one of the lovely ladies.
Yeah, we had some really, really nice comments, actually. It was really nice to get but people's feedback.
I think
in.
Karen was one of the comments that stood out to me. And Karen said the pressure as a sort of a middle-aged lady to, you know, to be slim and to be able to still fit in all your clothes that are sort of in your wardrobe
she
from
said
years ago.
She feels pressure from society being a curvy lady. That's kind of what impacts on her happiness. So, and I think, and we've had a lot of people saying things about sort of feeling that they've got, because of society, that they have to kind of fit into a certain box, or that they have to kind of mirror something that they've seen on social media, whether that be, you know, what the people are doing, what the people look like and things like that.
And I think this is where a really great tip is to consider role models. So, you know, having a role model in life of somebody who's a bit curvier, who you maybe find really entertaining or really funny or really smart, somebody who really embraces their curve. Because it really doesn't matter, you know, what you look like. What matters is how the, you know, that your family love you, or that your partner, or that and more so that you actually learn to love yourself, not for how you look, but for who you are. I mean, it doesn't matter what shape or size you are to be able to give somebody a hug. It doesn't matter what shape or size you are to offer an act of kindness or a compliment or laughter. And I do get it. I do get that, you know, that pressure exists. But I do think it's self-imposed pressure, because nobody actually comes up to you and says, "You're too curvy." That's not what happens. And these are all self-imposed
and that's, I'm going to say that's my tip for our handbook, is quantify the pressure. Where, you know, ask yourself, if you feel that pressure, ask yourself, where does that pressure come from?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I think a lot of the time we go along with it, but we don't ever question it. So, you know, we feel the pressure to look a certain way, but we don't ever go, well, hang on, why do I feel this pressure? I mean, I was just having a look then. Marilyn Monroe, one of the most beautiful women of all time, was apparently a size 14. You know, and so my point being here that what we, like, who are we comparing ourselves to? What are we considering is the right way to be? And why do we feel that way?
Well, and why do we not feel that way? That is the most important thing here, is the question is, why don't you feel good enough?
Yeah, and quantifying that pressure, you'll probably find when you really look back and you start thinking, why do I feel this way and where has it come from? You'll find that most often it's something from your past.
Yeah.
Someone has said something in your past and you're trying to live up to that statement. That's what it is.
And I think as well, parents often use this comparison as leverage. So, you know, well, look at such a body, they're doing really well at school, or look at such a body, they're not getting into trouble or staying out late. And it's this sort of comparison that then puts pressure on us to live up to being that other person. And look, I think in childhood that does happen, but that doesn't mean that your parent wants you to be that other person. That just means that they're saying, look, you know, what you're doing isn't great. I'd rather you behaved in this way. But what that can ultimately do is create this belief in us as a child. Oh my gosh, you know, the fact that my mum or my dad is or my grandma is comparing me to my cousin or to my brother or to my sister, that must mean that I'm not good enough. And that's absolutely not what they're saying. And, you know, even if that was your childhood, you can actually change that by changing your perspective, by realizing nobody ever asked you to change. All they were asking was, or highlighting, was maybe better behaviours.
That's true. Yeah.
And then at school, and the same goes for school, actually. You know, school teachers will quite often compare you to another child. Now, I have I'm not entirely comfortable with that one, because...
No, but it depends on the intent, doesn't
it? It does.
If the comparison is to lift you up, then that's fine. However, as a child, you might not have that skill, and you might just see it as absolute criticism, and therefore where there was good intent to lift you up, actually the result is bringing you down.
And I think it's okay to be inspired by people. So let's say, for example, you do want to lose weight because that's something that you want for you, and you might have a role model that, as you know, of a smaller size that you kind of look up to in a healthy way and want to be more like that. Or you might see someone doing really well in their career and you think, I want to be like that, and you want to take inspiration from that. And I think that is actually healthy, right? It's healthy to look up to certain people and get inspiration from them. But I think the key is to question, is it because you want that for yourself, or is it because you feel pressure from someone else, and that's someone else's ideal and not what actually you want? Have you ever questioned what you want and what it is that, you know, inspires you, and not just doing things because you think that's what other people want from you?
And more importantly, have you ever asked yourself, you know, what you want to be, who you want to be? And have you ever considered that, you know, without looking at comparisons, in your heart, you know, what do you want from your life? Forget out external pressures for 1 minute. If there was no pressure on you at all, consider and write down, you know, what would your world, your life, your career, you know, your image, what would all that look like? Because it's only when you know what you're looking to achieve that you can start to work towards that. And if you can't work towards that fully, you can start to look for compromises.
So again, another question is, so because obviously we've got social media, has that increased the pressure?
You know, if we look back before we had that. Yeah, massively.
Yeah, and undoubtedly.
I was saying before about young people, I know, you know, speaking to Hunter and speaking to other young people, that that's something that they feel massively, because social media now is so big. And that's the reason why they feel even more pressure to look a certain way, because obviously we were surrounded by people that we may thought were prettier than us or may look nicer than us, but it's a small set of people. Whereas with social media, you've got access to, you know, all these people. And, you know, a lot of them don't even look like what they're portraying they look like. So that makes it so much worse. And again, when I was, you know, saying before about milestones, thinking we've got to reach certain milestones by a certain age, or so-and-so has bought their first house already, and so-and-so has got a successful career already. And the truth is that, you know, we're all on our own journey, and no one can tell you what your story should look like. And just because someone else is doing it, don't feel pressure. If that's not your ideal or what you want, don't feel pressure to have to do those things just because that's what everyone else is doing. You know, I mean, I know as a woman, I think that there's a lot of pressure now on women sort of my age to, you know, get married, have children by a certain time. And now we're quite lucky that we are getting more opportunities as women, and we can now further our careers and work on our careers. And I know a number of women my age, a lot of my friends, that are at the point where, you know, some of my friends are having children. Other of my friends are sort of saying, actually, I really want to focus on my career and I'm not ready to have kids yet, because I've now got the opportunity to further my career, and that's what I really want. And maybe I don't want kids at all.
Yeah.
And I think all of those things are absolutely perfectly acceptable.
Correct.
You know, who can tell you how you should live your life? If you want to, if you know, if you've always wanted to have children and you want to do that, that's amazing. But equally, if you want to not have children, you want to focus on your own life and your own career, or maybe delay it for now, whatever you want to do, you should not feel pressure from anyone other than yourself and what you want to do and, to make things happen.
And in this modern world that we now live, we now actually have more choices to be able to do
Very
that.
Very lucky in that respect.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, how many people do we know? And there's a few that I can mention who, for example, some female friends who have frozen eggs because they want to focus on their career. And they've said, you know what, hopefully I'll meet somebody by that time and what and it'll go well. But just in case, I mean, wow.
So lucky if you have the opportunity. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I know Vicky Patterson's one of them, that she speaks out about her journey with that. And I think that how incredible that she has the opportunity available to her, that she can go, well, actually, I'm not ready to do that right now, but I've got the ability to wait, because obviously, you know, a few years ago, we wouldn't have had that ability.
No.
So we are really lucky, and we do. And I think that, you know, we should embrace those things. If they're available to you, you should embrace those and think, well, actually, I have got other options, and considering other options and considering what do you actually want rather than just what you feel you should do. And I think another one that you mentioned before, which I just want to bring back because I think is so important, is about men and them talking about their emotions and this pressure that men should not communicate how they're feeling. And I think now we're starting to get a shift in society more so that, you know, I mean, there's still a long way to go, but that men are realizing more and more that it's okay to talk about your emotions. It's okay to, you know, struggle with your mental health, because, you know, men are no different to women in that we all struggle with our mental health. It doesn't matter who you are. We can all have mental health problems. And just because you feel a pressure that you should be, you know, I mean, I don't know whether, interesting question for you two, whether you ever feel pressure that you have to kind of have perfect mental health because of what you do for a job, for example.
Yes, of course. You know, I think that, I mean, look, I think that the fortunate thing for us is that if a problem arises, and it does because we're human, that we have the tools
yeah.
to address that, don't
I'd
we?
I'd say that's the same with me, because I know that people say to me, oh, I bet you never struggle with anything because you've got your parents.
You
and I'm like, no, you're not getting it. It's like saying your parents are doctors, so I bet you never get ill.
Correct.
Of course I'm going to get ill because I'm a normal human being. But if my parents are doctors, they can help me, you know, recover quickly because yep. they can treat it in the yep. same way with you. That of course I'm not immune to struggling with anything in terms of my mental health.
Nor me.
No, we all get faced with the same things in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's just having, as I say, having the tools. And I think, so what we're saying here and bringing it forward to, you know, we all like certain clothes, and whether they're in fashion or not, those clothes are in fashion to us. And therefore, our lives, our individual lives, should always be in fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, going on mental health, I just think that if people are struggling with their mental health, that's a really important thing to say, that don't feel the pressure to be perfect, because perfect doesn't exist. And, you know, well, speak about how you feel.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And the fact is, there's no one more perfect for being you than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you 100%. Are unique.
I think a lot of us also, and little tip here, a lot of us put pressure on ourselves by saying, oh, I've got to do this and I've got to do that. I've got to go to work. I've got to do the ironing. I've got to cook dinner. And that word got puts immense pressure on us. It's telling ourselves that we have no choice in this, and that it's a task that's quite oppressive, and it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be pleasurable. However, if we just change that by one letter, so instead of I've got to, we use I get to. So I get to go to work because I have a job, and I get to do the ironing because I've got clothes to wear, and I get to cook dinner because we've got food in the fridge. And I think just a slight change, even if it doesn't feel right when you first start saying it, the more you do, the more it starts to feel right. And as they say, practice makes perfect.
And looking at what we've got as opposed to, because comparison robs us
yeah.
of our dreams and puts us under pressure.
So,
whereas looking at what we've actually done, what we've got, what we've achieved, makes us realize how amazing we are.
And not suppressing who you are, not feeling that yeah. you can't be yourself because you've got to fit in a certain box, I think is so important. You know, I mean, for a little bit of science corner, research stats for you, you know, we know that, you know, when you've got people that have been through sort of adversity and difficult life events, one of the big mediators that can determine whether or not they end up really struggling with their mental health or not is how they express those emotions. If they do express those emotions, we tend to see that's a great coping strategy. Talking to someone, expressing how you feel, can mean that people can, you know, function really well. Whereas if people do suppress their emotions, don't feel that they can be open about how they're feeling, and they feel that pressure to keep that in, that can lead to really negative mental health outcomes. So it's so important that people don't suppress how they're feeling and who they are and can be themselves.
Yep.
And, you know, we know that in, you know, countries where people have a greater freedom of expression, they also have greater well-being and they feel better in themselves.
It's such a good point. I always see that as, if you imagine that every pressure you have, it's like putting a bit more air into the balloon. And there comes a point where this balloon is so full, it's ready to pop. But just by speaking, you're letting out a little bit of air every time, letting a bit more out. And so the pressure in that balloon becomes reduced. And this is why, you know, a lot of people say, oh, but what's the benefit of talking? I want a solution. But believe us when we say that even talking it out is letting some of that pressure off. It's letting some of that air out. Because as you vocalize things, it does give you an opportunity to actually start to see things in a different way. It's only when it's in our head that it's kind of festering. And then when we don't vocalize, we tend to catastrophize. And therefore, this is why speaking is just such a great thing. So bringing it all in now, guys, and our metaphorical handbook to happiness, I think we've actually dotted today's episode with lots of little nuggets
yeah.
of
yeah,
gems
and I think
of information.
The main thing is just realize that we're just realizing that the pressure that you feel is actually created by you, and look as to where that pressure comes from, why you've created that. Is that something in the past? If it's someone making you feel under pressure right now, go and speak to that person and say, I'm feeling pressured by this. How can we, you know, change it so I don't feel as bad?
I just want to add into that, because I think a lot of people listening might disagree with you on that. because you're saying it's self-imposed, but people might be thinking, well, no, it's not, because it's my boss that's putting that pressure on me, so that's not self-imposed. Or I don't know, it's my family telling me that I have to get married by a certain point in my life, and therefore they're putting the pressure on me. So I'm just going to explain what I know what
you're
trying to say.
Yeah, go on.
So what I'm saying is, I can imagine a lot of people listening might think, well, no, it's not self-imposed, because it's, you know, my school or my university or whatever it might be. And I totally get what you're saying, and I just wanted to kind of just elaborate on that, which is, people are right in that it is external factors that's putting that pressure in place, as in society, as in your, you know, academics, your boss, whatever. However, whether or not you allow yourself to take that on is down to you. So what I mean by that is, you've got the ability to kind of go, well, I accept that there's a lot of this pressure at university, but whatever happens, I will find a solution. I can only do my best. So I'm not going to allow that pressure to, or feel that pressure, because I accept that I can only do my best and I'm going to give my best shot.
Okay, so let's agree then that we all regulate that pressure.
Yes, and we can choose how we see that
how
pressure,
we see it,
and whether
we
take it on.
And I'm saying that if it is your boss or your partner who's making you feel under pressure, tell them, right? Yeah. Don't just feel it. Tell them and just say, do you realise when you do that? And actually, you might find that when you say to someone, do you realise that makes me feel really bad because I feel really under pressure? They might say, I had no idea. I can do that. I can take it off your
delivery.
Hands. But again, it's communication and it's speaking.
Yeah, delivery in that is very important, that it's not confrontational. It's, look, I know that you're a very nice person, or I know that you want the best for me, but when you say this or ask me this,
it does make
me feel under pressure. So do you have anything else to add before I put my little final bit into our handbook for happiness?
Yeah, so I think my final thing is just to say that, you know, and we've said this before, but I just really want to reiterate the fact that we are all on our own journey. And, you know, if you imagine that every one of us, our lives are going to be written in a book, and it's all like a book. If every book was the same, no one would read.
Yep.
Because it's all the same story, and it's not interesting to anyone.
Very true. And just to add to that, and comparison again, what we are often doing is comparing our chapter 3 with someone's chapter 10.
Absolutely.
And that's why we can feel inadequate, but they're 7 chapters ahead of us.
And
so,
also, we're not all given the same, you know, benefits when we're born. We're not all given the same life, you know, abilities. You know, some people are born into different circumstances to others. So it's making the most of our story and ultimately doing what you want with that story. You know, there's not one path. You know, all these views that we've had that, you know, may have come from society, you know, I mean even another ideal that I know that I've had a conversation with Hunter about, kind of this ideal that we're brought up with, the fact that, you know, if you've come from, say, a perfect family, that, you know, your parents got married and had children, that you might feel a pressure that then, if, let's say, you've had a failed relationship or you've ended up getting divorced, that you feel like a failure because that's not, you've not had that perfect path. But who's to say that that's the right path? Everyone's path is different, and ultimately you've got to make the most of your journey, your path, and what you want out of life, and nobody else. Because if you follow someone else's pressure, ultimately you're never going to be happy anyway, because you're living for someone else. So I think that, you know, my absolute top tip is questioning, which is what you said before, what do you want? What do you want out of life? What do you want your story to look like? And being motivated, rather than pressure, being motivated by others that are doing what we would like to do, and using that to inspire us, and not feeling pressure to be anything other than what we want.
Okay, so my addition, so you stole my book. I was going to say that the reason that we can have very varying autobiographies and we will pick each up with interest is because everybody's life is very different, and you're very different, but that difference is brilliant, because that's what makes us all very unique, and that's a wonderful thing that should be embraced. So I was going to say that, but Liv stole that one, so okay.
It was a good point.
Thank you.
The
second one, again, Liv kind of picked up on it a little bit, and that is just consider, grab a paper, some paper and a pen, and consider, if there was no pressure in my life, what would I want from my life? And with that, also creating some goals for you. And the final thing is that it doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, what you're doing, if you care about yourself adequately that you don't need external validation. Mm. And therefore, my final little bit of information is self-appreciation. And that might be, even if it's just complimenting one body part, one quality every single morning and every night, when you look in the mirror to brush your teeth, tell yourself, I'm a kind person, I've got great eyes, whatever it might be. And remind yourself morning and night, because the truth is that you are perfect and good enough as you are. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast or watching our YouTube today. We hope that we've provoked your thoughts there into feeling less pressure in your life. Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. Wherever you're listening to this podcast today, do be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and we'd be incredibly grateful of a 5-star review.
Oh, and don't forget to recommend our podcast to your family and friends.
And if you'd like to have a look at some more free resources, take a look at our website, nickandeva.com.
If you want to drop us a question, we'd love to hear from you. Send it to admin@speakman.tv.
And you can follow us. We're at The Speakmans on all social media platforms. On YouTube, we're Handbook to Happiness Pod. If you are struggling, do be sure to speak to your general practitioner. And all that's left to say is that we appreciate you spending time with us today.